Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What a gem of a sports day. Welcome in Grant and Danny on the Fan. It's Thursday, March 28th, 2024. Happy opening day. Nationals baseball season number 20 to all who celebrate. We are live at Rudy's Golf and Sports Bar in Kingstown, Alexandria, ahead of the opener of a brand new Nat season. They've got two levels of driving ranges, top tracer technology, putt-putt courses, and a full restaurant fun for everybody in the family. Come on out to Rudy's Golf and hang with us today. This is the go-to spot for golf and entertainment. Two pairs of tickets to big-time D.C. sporting events to give away today. At 3 o'clock, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to see the Caps. They are barreling down the stretch. They have just six home games left. You'll be in the good seats at one of those if you're listening at 3 and you're the right caller. And then at 3:30, before we get out of here, for Charlie and Dave's pregame show and first pitch a little bit after 4 in Cincinnati, we've got tickets to Nationals opening day, 5 days away on Monday at home. That's the home opener in D.C., but they kicked the season off in Cincinnati today.
This is one of those great days. You can't beat me today. You can't get me down today. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Opening day. I'm going to say it one more time. It's opening day. Not the weird last week opening day at 3 a.m. I must be lonely. Matchbox 20. None of that crap. It's opening day, NCAA tournament tonight. Opening day today, NCAA tournament tonight. It's opening day today, and then the NCAA tournament tonight. So my plan, as soon as you and I are done here at Rudy's Golf, hanging out for a little bit, when it comes time, I'm not going to sit on my couch. No. I'm laying on my couch. I'm going to be so comfortable for hours watching Sports Joy on my television. I cannot wait. What's for dinner? I have no idea. I don't even care right now. I'm in such a good and happy mood, my friend. It is opening day. Let it wash over you.
Yeah, I'll see your 4:05 first pitch for the Nationals at Great American Ballpark against the Reds. I will see your Sweet 16 action all night long with four college hoops games as we kick the tourney back off for the second phase of this NCAA craziness. But I will raise you the Caps in Toronto tonight to play Leafs. Maybe no Austin Matthews is on the verge of goal number 60. He's got 59 on the season. The Leafs are down a bunch of their best players, so good news for Washington as they saddle up for a critical game against an Atlantic foe this evening in the East. A couple of points would do them very well as they try to make the playoffs. But as you said, the Nats on center stage. This is the 20th season now, believe it or not, Danny, of Nationals baseball. 20 seasons.
No
way. Nats baseball, yeah.
Wow.
Came back to the district in 2005, first pitch thrown at RFK Stadium back in April of that year by Levon Hernandez.
I think it was 73 miles an hour, numbers approximate, best fastball.
8-11 all-time on opening day. They are 4-7 at home and 4-4 on the road in openers. This is the second time they'll play game number one of a new season against the Reds. Today marks a tie for the earliest they've ever opened their year on March 28th. They did the same with Max Scherzer on the hill going back a few years ago. But there's just nothing like that feeling. You wake up, the baseball season begins. If you're a big fan of baseball, the only thing better is if they were at home, but we'll get that on Monday. This is almost better because that'll feel like a bonus.
Yeah.
At that point. This is a, as you said, college hoops tonight, opening day. Really since last Thursday with the NCAA tournament, this has been about as good a week and as hard a week to work and not just leave the office as there's probably been in a long time.
It's just so great. I love it. These gifts that we're given every single year, these uniquely American activities. You know, I mean, listen, as you settle into the dog days in June and July and August, and, you know, if your team is like the Nats are this year, you know, several games under 500 and kind of scratching and clawing, and, you know, a couple guys are hurt and you're looking at 4A Freddies and, you know, starting pitchers that, you know, so we call those the Paolo Espino type starts where somebody's got to get the ball, you know. It turns into a bit more of a grind, but that's not what it's about. It's about renewal. It's about kind of that beginning where this incredibly comfortable, beautiful, wonderful thing is going to be with you anytime you want for the next 6-7 months, right? When you come home, what's on? The Nationals run, right? You got an afternoon tilt. You can duck out of the office, grab a hot dog and a beer, you know, down there at Nats Park. It's the best, dude. I love it so much. I love the game. It surprises you every year as it morphs and changes and players come and go. The way, you know, trends in the league, it's, you know, being old enough now to have seen multiple iterations of how the game has been played, the new era we're in now where the stolen bases all of a sudden come back, like we're watching the St. Louis Cardinals in the mid-'80s. I love it. I love everything about it. It's so fun. It's so excellent, and it's always there for you.
Yeah, almost any other day on this show in this town, the lead would be Drake May's Pro Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, our number one story that we spent much of our first hour on was Jaden Daniels of LSU's Pro Day. The fact that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and Lance Newmark and the entire collection of Commanders brass flew into Baton Rouge to not only watch him work out, break a sweat, throw the football indoors in the LSU training complex, but then to meet with him, go to dinner, get to know the guy a little bit. They're doing the exact same thing today with Drake May. This is quarterback speed dating at this point.
Yeah.
They basically have set up a table. It's like a scene out of a movie.
That's right.
Where you're just bringing 6 or 7 different prospective girlfriends through, and you're going through all the critical questions and checking boxes and, you know, crossing people off the list. They are one by one here. J.J. McCarthy this past week. Now Jaden Daniels. Drake May today. They've already spent time with and probably wasted some time watching Caleb Williams, who's going to go first overall and be unavailable to them. But Drake May, who is PFF's highest graded passer against Power 5 teams in this draft class, 90.8 grade, a hair better than Caleb Williams, 90.6, then Penix at 89, Nix at 83, Rattler at 80.7, and then Daniels at 80.2, and McCarthy at 79.6, if you're curious. Drake May takes center stage in the scouting world today. Everybody at North Carolina who's seeking a quarterback in the top half of the first round.
You're going to see a specimen. I mean, that's what you can't take your eyes off a guy like that. You remember years ago when you and I were at training camp down in Richmond? By the way, how long ago does that seem? And when Montez Sweat was a rookie, all we could talk about is, I know these are NFL football players. I know they're all big and strong and fast. I understand how massive, you know, John Allen is. I understand how massive some of these defensive linemen are. And you cannot stop. You can't stop looking at Montez Sweat, who's so big, who's so strong, who's so lean. His arms are so long. Just a freak. That's what Drake May is to me, honestly. Like, he's so easy to dream on. A physical specimen like that. Again, that big, that stout, that physically tough and imposing. There's a kind of that Josh Allen-style build to him, right, where if he needs to, he'll lower shoulder, knock you back a little bit if you're a 190-pound cornerback that is unlucky enough to meet him on a scramble in the secondary, and an absolute howitzer for an arm, all of the throws, anything that you can imagine for an offense, that guy has the skill set to be able to do it. Will he? Of course, who knows? I mean, this is the ultimate crapshoot. It's the ultimate, inexact science. But, man, this is a type of day for – yesterday, Daniel's showing athleticism. For May, that kind of workout in shorts and a T-shirt where the ball's going to be humming around the yard, it is easy to shine if you have that kind of that skill set.
Yeah, it's plus arm, and he'll make every throw for sure. Daniels can do the same thing, maybe a tad less arm, but he's got the faders turned up in other areas that Drake May doesn't. They're different prospects. But at 6'4", 230, he is central casting put together. We've all played video games, Madden now, but whatever the game was growing up over the years, where you make your own quarterback at some point. And the quarterback probably has your name, and it's your career,
Danny
right?
May.
You were probably about 6'4 and about 230. That is the central casting look for a QB. The Bears have the number one pick. It's Williams. The whole draft starts with the Commanders at 2, very likely. And then the Patriots hold the third pick. They're probably going to go QB and not trade back, based on most of the reporting right now. But what's really interesting is, if J.J. McCarthy jumps into the top three and somebody falls, which I would guess is more likely May than Daniels, just based on rumblings.
If there's a falling, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like, if one of those guys is still available at 4, does someone come up to get them?
Feeding frenzy.
Maybe it's McCarthy if he's the fourth guy, if it's Daniels, if it's May. But like, I'll give you an example. The New York Giants are going to be whining and dining and bringing Drake May to New York. There's a report today. Mm-hmm. They apparently really like what they see. Now, he's probably not going to be there at 6. But let's say Washington takes Daniels, and let's say the Patriots stun everybody and take McCarthy. Would the Giants try to beat the Vikings to go up to number 4 with Arizona to take Drake May to be their future at QB when they can get out of the Daniel Jones contract at the end of the year? These are the types of things that we'll be talking about for weeks leading up to the draft. Other teams that could be in the quarterback mix, the Vikings at 11, the Broncos at 12, the Raiders at 13, I would say are the three most likely teams to trade up ahead of the Chargers and the Giants with Arizona at 4.
Yeah, that's where I think the feeding frenzy is going to be. Whoever the fourth quarterback is, teams are going to be trying to acquire that player, right? Because the quarterback star of teams, as you said, are north of 10, having to work their way back in to the top part of the draft where those guys are going to go or you know, will likely be available. That's where it's going to be a challenge, right? So, I mean, I thought at one point Tennessee was a team that might get traded with, right? Because, you know, if you're going to roll with Will Levis for year number two, who showed a couple nice things in year number one with pretty inadequate staff or inadequate supporting cast, okay, maybe they're a target to be traded with. Now I think if you want one of those guys, it's Arizona. That's who you have to call.
We'll dig in on trying to get some details on how the May Pro Day goes as we're on the air today here on Grant and Danny Live on The Fan. From Rudy's Golf in Kingstown, Alexandria, as we celebrate opening day for the Nationals. Speaking of opening day, the Nats lineup came out about an hour ago. As you'd expect, C.J. Abrams batting right at the top of the order, playing shortstop today. He became their catalyst, their spark plug, and became what is kind of an impact leadoff hitter and a real pain in the butt for opponents midway through last season. He stole almost 40 bases from right before the All-Star break till the end of the season. In fact, I jumped on FanDuel today and grabbed C.J. Abrams to steal 50 bags at like four and a half to one just about.
I mean, I know a lot of things can happen, but if he's healthy, I think I hammer that over.
Excited to see another year advance now, both physically and mentally, more mature, you'd imagine, for Abrams, who is still younger. Mike Rizzo mentions this all the time. Like, some of the top prospects that get to the big leagues this year are going to be older or the same age as Abrams.
Yeah.
He's only 23 years old. 18 homers, 47 stolen bases last year with about a league average OPS. If he can get to a point where he hits a little better or gets on base a hair more, draws a few more walks, 60 steals, which sounds insane, but in this era, you mentioned it earlier in the segment, baseball has changed the rules. They want athletes, they want running, they want action on the base paths. They've made it easier than it's been really at any point ever to steal bases. Abrams is the ultimate player to take advantage of that for Washington.
Well, if you look at his splits from last year, right, the kind of beginning of the season, hitting ninth and just sort of, you know, just sort of around, right, was part of the, not part of the furniture, but I don't want to say he was a spectator, but he really didn't seem as involved, right, just sort of there at the bottom part of the order. Once he got the keys, Davey said, you're better than this. Over his last 70 games, he stole 33 bases, homered 11 times. I mean, you start to extrapolate those over 162. I know you can't do that, but if you do, those are ungodly numbers that we're talking about, right? Mid-20s homers, 60-some stolen bases.
Well, how about what Davey told us at spring training a couple weeks back? He said that when he sat Abrams down and told him right before the All-Star break last year, I'm moving you up to the top of the order. You're going to play every single day, and you're going to hit leadoff every single day for the rest of the year. The way that Davey explained it to us was Abrams kind of looked at him and was like, are you sure? I mean, he was taken aback right. and essentially tried to talk him out of it. And Davey said, it's time, man. Like, we're not waiting any longer.
Yeah, this isn't cute. This isn't tiddlywinks.
Yeah, like, we brought you here to do this. You can do it, and we know it, whether you think you can or not. It's go time. And his entire career changed at that point.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked to him at spring training, and it's very clear. Like, this, there is star potential here. Well, not just pretty good, not just, oh, you know, he's a nice player for the Nats, so what? No. There is, you could look up at the end of the season and see some absurd counting stats. I don't know that he's a 300 hitter. I don't know that that's the kind of thing he has in his bag. I think he'll improve in that regard as this, you know, as his career goes, refine his batting out a little bit, more balls in play, use some of that speed. But I think this is a 20-homer, 60-steal potential season. At how fun is that to say, by the way, at the top of your order?
Lane Thomas going to bat second today and play right field. He is back for another go with the Nats. He's been their organizational player of the year each of the last two seasons. A guy that a lot of us, I say us because I was one of these folks, thought was going to be traded maybe at the deadline last year because there was some value for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was really slugging the baseball. They decided to hang on to him. Clearly the Nationals think he can be a long-term contributor here with James Wood and Dylan Cruz in the outfield. He's coming off 28 homers and 20 steals. Now, again, I know it was easier to steal bases last year, but 25 and 20 hadn't happened around here very much. You're talking about
that's Ian Desmond type stuff.
Like
yeah.
Desmond, Harper, Lane Thomas. It's a pretty select group of guys. I'm not sure if he'll hit 28 homers again. I would take the under on that number. I do think he can steal 20 bags. He had an OPS near 800 last year despite running out of gas in the final several weeks of the season. I'm happy that they kept Lane Thomas looking back now because I do think it's just important to have a veteran who can help run the clubhouse. And he was doing that. In fact, at one point in the spring, I heard an anecdote where Dylan Cruz was kind of being asked to do a whole lot of things, different media appearances and interviews and, you know, doing different fan events and whatnot. And Lane Thomas kind of came up and said, hey, let's take it easy on Dylan for a couple days. Like, let's just let him kind of go about his business. That's the kind of thing over the years that a Ryan Zimmerman or a Jason Worth or like a clubhouse
Howie Kendrick type
general would have done. There's nobody to do that. And Lane Thomas probably doesn't really like or want to be that guy, but you're 28.
You look around, you go, I'm the senior statesman here among a lot of the position
so
players.
So it's a good thing he's still here, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he performs in game one of the season
18
today.
Outfield assists last year too, by the way, an underrated defender. I think in that regard, does a little bit of everything. And again, we should bring up every day, acquired for John Lester. Acquired for John Lester, an all-time trade.
Rest of the lineup, only thing I'll throw out, because we can get into this in more detail later, but that intrigued me and is worth mentioning right off the top, their Jesse Winker thing is not really for me. I was a big fan of his as a prospect coming up. He's actually a former Red, and he's going back home to Great American Ballpark, where he's been a fan favorite at one point in time. But they've got him hitting third and playing left field to start the season.
Yeah.
I think they just are really, really obsessed with going left, right throughout the entire order to have the most balance possible and get some matchups maybe in the late innings. But Winker hitting third for me is interesting and doesn't make a ton of sense. He did have a good spring. He does have some power. And let's face it, this is not a particularly great lineup.
No. So Pastor, your 1-2 is as good as anybody's.
Absolutely.
Right? After
but
that.
Meneses and Gallo, who hit 100 in the spring. Ruiz has some power but hasn't really put it all together offensively. The one great trait he's got is he doesn't swing and miss very often. Eddie Rosario, the left-handed hitting center fielder, who's got big-time power, was the NLCS MVP with the Braves. They signed him in spring training. They're going to start him in center, even though he's traditionally been more of a corner outfielder. So Victor Robles is on the bench. That'd be the one guy I would have considered hitting higher in the order. But for the start of the season, at least, and I know people are annoyed by this, but this is not permanent. This is for a handful of weeks, and they'll see how the kids do at their minor league assignments. Rosario, Senzel, Winker, I mean, these are your place-holding rentals. That's all this is. And as soon as James Wood gets off to a fast start and is killing the ball at Rochester, he'll be in Washington. Same for Trey Lipscomb. These other guys are just holding places at this point.
Yeah, if you could somehow guarantee me 2021, Jesse Winker, okay, I'll sign up for that. But this is one of those.
Is that the year he was an all-star?
Yeah, that's the 305 average, 24 bolts. in only 110 games.
You know, for him, think about it, though. There's not many places where you can get an opportunity right now to hit in the middle of an order and try to get your career back on track by playing every day and, and getting kind of the marquee setup. What a coup for him to find a place where your wants and theirs kind of align at the
moment.
Absolutely.
Everybody needs something from each other.
And if he gets off to a fast start and he hits 290 with some power in the first 2 months of the year, probably can flip him for something decent.
100%. And I think that's the plan. You know, it's worked out sometimes. It hasn't other times. I mean, they were going to do that with Nelson Cruz, who didn't really hit when he was here. And, you know, there are a bunch of examples. And it makes sense for an organization that's where they are right now. You're not wed to any of these guys on these short-term deals. But, yeah, in terms of it, this is all just kind of the countdown clock. Somebody has to hit in the middle of the order. They don't really have middle-of-the-order bats. So I think you're going to see that fluctuate a little bit after that 1-2 combo of Abrams and Thomas.
Rudy's Golf and Sports Bar in Kingstown is where we're broadcasting live from right now. You can hang with us, watch a little Nats baseball today for the first time in 2024 as they open their season in Cincinnati. Want to get into the Drake May Pro Day, look ahead to the Caps game tonight as well. As we continue next, we're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Live from Rudy's Golf and Sports Bar in Kingstown in Alexandria, we're Grant and Danny broadcasting live ahead of and during opening day today. We will be here with Nats fans. Double deck driving range, top tracer technology, putt-putt courses, and a full restaurant. Fun for the entire family. Rudy'sGolf.com. This is the new go-to spot for golf and entertainment. Danny, we had the privilege of being out here every single Thursday.
It just feels right, dude.
Ahead of Thursday night football, all football season long. And this place is a blast for sports and the food at this restaurant. People think of Rudy's as a driving range, I think, largely.
Yep.
This restaurant is bangarang.
I love it here. I love this place. I missed Thursdays at Rudy's. I missed it. I got used to it. Was it 18 weeks, 19 weeks? Maybe we missed Thanksgiving. I can't remember what it was. The point was, it was every Thursday, man. And I tried everything on the menu. I liked everything. I had things multiple times. Ryan gets 3 buffalo chicken dips every time he comes. This place rules. They're so nice here. You can smash golf balls, watch sports, and eat delicious foodstuffs. It's so relaxed. It's so casual. I love it. I love it.
Last time I looked over at Ryan was right when we started the show, and he looked like he was in pain.
Yeah.
Are you at your third bowl? I see another bowl in front of you, but you're not eating much of it. You've slowed down immensely.
So I've eaten 2 bowls myself here, and I've been here since 10 a.m. But technically, this is bowl number 4.
Okay.
Now, Pat Malley, our engineer here on site, he's been helping me out a little bit. I claimed 2.5 bowls already. That was our over-under that we set yesterday.
So you've not gone over.
Right now, we're pushing. I think I might be able to go over here, but I don't know.
I just noticed that the speed with which he's eating the bowls has slowed.
It has slowed
massively.
Precipitously. Yeah.
The first bowl I was here for, I walked in. You couldn't have drawn this up any better. I actually laughed. I walked in, and they walked right in front of me with a bowl of buffalo chicken dip and handed it to Ryan.
Like, where's that going?
That was the first thing I saw when I got here. You ate that in probably 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah, easily.
This has been sitting here for a while, and you haven't touched it.
Yeah, because, again, this is one that Pat ordered. Now, we've kind of been doing a little share situation here. I dominated the course, I will admit, but – I think I could probably kind of dip my fingers in this
bowl. Where's your fullness and your stomach at right now?
I'm at 100 out of 10. I'm down bad.
Okay.
I'm really bad, yeah.
But you're still
bad.
Predicting that you're going to get another half bowl.
I think I can catch a second win here. I think I could.
I like Danny's chances to help you out as well. You dipped into the wings, I believe?
I did. I did so their wings are smoked.
They are.
And it is fantastic.
You got to go extra crispy, too. It's just that crunch.
Yeah,
I did
the buffalo, and just to go back and forth between palates here. So I got the buffalo sauce, get a little bit of punch to you, and then I went mozzarella sticks as a way to kind of calm that down, because what's more mild than mozzarella? Nothing is the answer to that. And what they do is they fry it in some breaded coating. So going back and forth between the two was just a perfect way to start my day.
Did you consider a hot dog, what with it being Major League Baseball opening day?
They
have one on the menu.
They do, and I've had it multiple times. I thought about it, guy. But then I just the wings were calling, and I was like, well, I need to compliment the wings. How am I going to do that? I settled on mozzarella sticks. I'm now regretting not getting a hot dog because you called out directly because I thought about it.
Still
and then
got
didn't.
Time.
And now I'm feeling guilt that I didn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I let you down in a way. I don't like that feeling. I don't like that. I don't like feeling like I let you down.
The day is young.
Yeah.
Still got at least an hour of on-air time and whatever you're going to do watching the game thereafter.
The day is Chase Young.
A hot dog could still be in your future. Drake May Day today. Yesterday was Jaden Daniels' turn. Today, Washington and every other NFL team looking for a quarterback has descended upon Chapel Hill for Pro Day to see Drake May sling the pill at their complex and their training facility. What's your – I'll give you mine in a second, but you're a little more neutral and or lower, so to speak, on Drake May. What's your breakdown on what he could be as a ceiling and what he could be as a floor as you see him?
Justin Herbert is the ceiling to me. Like an absolute beast that makes a handful of wow throws per game where you just go, that's just stupid. That shouldn't be. A human being shouldn't be able to do that, right? Push it to the opposite side of the field, a 30-yard deep out where there's not much separation between receiver and cornerback. Those, not YOLO balls, but the, yeah, I can put it in there and have him be correct. Brett Favre style, you know? More athletic than people think, can scramble for first downs, can do anything and everything you want in a on a football field. There's no, well, we have to coach around that. Now we have to, we can't run those certain kinds of plays because, you know, he can't run them as effectively. The whole menu is open. The whole deep shots are open. Intermediate stuff is open. Everything is there. My worry is, I don't have a good comp for my worry. And this is not just, it's like I'm studying film. I watched a couple games like a lot of people did. But just, you know, sort of reading the people that are negative about him, or more negative, I would say. Accuracy issues at times, you know, kind of lack of touch at times.
Inconsistencies.
Yeah.
I was talking to Logan Paulson about this because Logan had come out several weeks back and said he preferred Daniels, and he wasn't very high on May at that time from what I could gather. And I hit him up. And I just wanted help. I'm like, I'm watching him, and I love this kid. Like, what am I missing? Mm-hmm. The thing he didn't like is he said, if you watch the majority of every game, it's awesome. But he felt like there was a stretch in just about every game he watched where he would just miss a few throws in a row, whether it was mechanics, footwork, whatever. There was inconsistencies that would lead to – think about it like a basketball player who would just miss several shots in a row and would kind of – with different form.
Yeah.
And he – I think for Logan, that was hard for him, and he said basically he slotted him lower because of that. I definitely think there are some issues that need to be cleaned up, for sure. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He's a college quarterback, man.
Right. Like, yeah, who doesn't have that?
The way I look at it is I'm trying to find the good and the positive traits. So with Jaden Daniels, you are an all-world runner of the football who can make every single throw. You're one of the great athletes to come out of college in the last several years, and you just did something incredible in the best conference in the country. 50 combined tutties with 4 interceptions, and you won the Heisman Trophy. The negatives are, I think, worth keeping top of mind because they are the reasons why a guy might not be a success.
Yeah.
And for Drake May, I think those are, hey, why didn't you dominate? Like, why weren't you ever able to just throw the team on your back and put up crazy numbers after that, you know, first initial stretch he had in year one? I personally think the team wasn't very good. The cast around him wasn't very good. I mentioned the
numbers support that too.
Yesterday in WAR for supporting cast from PFF, where on average guys were between 2.5 and 3.5 wins, and Drake May was literally in the negatives in terms of his supporting cast. Compared to the other guys, it was night and day. But the upside for me is, you mentioned Herbert. I think that's the favorite comp for people. Mm-hmm. When you watch him, you definitely see that it jumps out. I think he's got some Josh Allen, too. I could see a hybrid of those two guys. Now, that is not me saying I think he'll be as good as the combination of Josh Allen and Justin Herbert.
As a quick side, do you remember when in 2012 when they were like, how good is Robert Griffin? Like, the legs of Michael Vick, the arm of Brett Favre.
Right.
They made this, like, super $6 million man robot of the great – probably the greatest quarterback ever to walk the earth. And we're like, maybe calm down a little bit.
Totally.
With that. So nobody's saying that.
I think he is Herbert from a passing in the pocket standpoint with the big size, standing there flat-footed, quiet like a Tom Brady, patting the football and then slinging it. But I think he's got some – let's get out of the pocket and run through some people here because I'm huge. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen to him, where he scrambled for over 40 first downs the last couple of years. Williams, low 20s. You know, Daniels, low 20s. Drake May, 42 first downs on third and fourth down that he scrambled for. So that's kind of my upside. I guess if I have a fear or a worry about the floor, it is that it seems like a lot of the media evaluators with front office experience, not all of them, but plenty of them, he's the guy that they have the most questions about. Surprises me, and frankly, I don't really get that, but that does give me pause. Guys like Lewis Riddick are smarter than I am.
Yeah.
You know, Kurt Warner watches the film, and he comes away, and he's like, I'm not a Drake May guy. And that makes me go, huh, he knows more about it than I do.
Yeah, it's the to say, hey, I've got him slotted. Like Chris Sims, for example. I know everybody beats him up because he missed on Zach Wilson like the rest of the world did or something. But his batting average is higher than a lot of people's, I would say. Has him slotted way lower.
His batting average has taken some hits the last couple seasons.
Again, I think he's a pretty sharp
dude. He
does
an okay job.
Yeah, who's got his own, you know, criteria that he judges by. He's got him way lower. And it's different to me when – and we talked about this a bunch, but something I want to harp on. It's different to say, I've got Daniel slotted ahead of him. That's not crazy to me.
Sure.
I've even got McCarthy slotted ahead of him because of X, Y, Z. Fine. But there's more of that. I'm not a Drake May guy. That's the part that I just don't get from even these really smart guys, where it's like I don't see it with him. You know, whether it's, you know, Riddick or Kurt Warner or otherwise. They're more negative than, hey, I've got two guys ahead of him who I like better.
The only thing that's strange to me is that people think he needs to sit for a year. But they believe that, like, Daniels or McCarthy or Williams, like, start him week one. Drake May, maybe next year. I don't really get that. But these guys are unique and different enough that I think they're going to have a flavor. You're looking at a food menu at a restaurant. You grab the menu here at Rudy's. You look at the mozzarella sticks. I see the chicken wings, right? I mean, it is very unique profiles. But today is Drake May's pro day. The Commander's getting to know him. Supposedly they met with him, dined with him, and hung out this morning before his throw-in session and all this stuff on the field. I wonder if there will be anything else this evening before they leave town. One report I did see is that he's going to head with the Giants to New York at some point to go meet with their brass and hang out in their facility and get on the whiteboard. Next on Grant and Danny, we're live at Rudy's Golf. The Wizards and the Capitals are staying in D.C. Ted Leonsis took a beating publicly over the last few weeks for trying to move the teams. Will he be forgiven? I mean, is this going to be something that does not linger for him, or is he going to be viewed and vilified by the fans that were angry about the potential move the same way for a long time as he is right now? I want to get into that on G&D here on The Fan.
Well, let me just say, we never stopped talking to Monumental. We never stopped negotiating, and we never stopped making our deal an even better deal. So I would say that the culmination of the signing that we celebrated last night, you know, probably started 2 weeks after they announced the start. I shouldn't say the culmination, the commencement. We started paving that road 2 weeks or 3 weeks after their announcement about Virginia. So we never, you know, gave up on keeping our teams. We focused on making our deal better, and that's the result.
D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, who for a short time, it looked like, had lost the Caps and the Wizards to Virginia, but they are back. In a big, big way. $515 million going to go to Monumental to keep them on 7th and F Streets over in Chinatown through 2050.
2050
is the agreement. So 26 more years of those two teams being in D.C. at least, and then we'll reassess at that time, and I'm sure everyone will be excited to have Capital One Arena be 60 years old and not have a new arena at that point. Let's just put some more lipstick on it, and it'll be – it's better to have a 4 than a 10 somewhere else, right?
I guess.
But that is not the point of the dude's story. That press conference yesterday was an all-timer. I give Ted and the mayor credit because they acknowledged a couple different ways what had happened previously. I know your speculation was that they would just pretend like Virginia never happened. They made some veiled mentions. But, man, oh, man, we all know. Everybody watching and listening on 106.7 The Fan last night, we know the story here. They were going to Virginia.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to go to Virginia, basically, by Senator Lucas, and it didn't work out. They now are coming back to D.C. because that's where the arena is, and that's where they can have an arena moving forward. Bowser's kind of celebrating as if, like, I stole them back from Virginia. Okay. Victory lap if you want to.
Yeah.
But it all worked out in the sense that D.C. teams are going to be in D.C., and the place where we've got all the great memories of the Caps Cup and so many playoff appearances and the Wizards getting to the postseason those few times, they're going to continue to be there.
What I've learned in doing this gig is that 99.3, maybe 4, maybe even 5 or 6% of people don't care about how. They don't. If Dan Snyder had left the yacht and picked the right quarterback, everyone would have been happy because the quarterback was good. You know what I mean? Like, there's some of us that can't get past how stuff happens. I'm one of those people. I need to know. I need to understand. And I need people held accountable for bad processes. And that's what this was. Make no mistake about it. This wasn't some negotiating genius. This wasn't some, Machiavellian, three-dimensional chess move ahead or behind. They got lucky. They didn't have their ducks in a row. There was arrogance on the part of D.C. leadership on a million different fronts, totally ignored something that was a very real threat for them to leave, and they couldn't have been more fortunate that Virginia politics is a hot, buttered, tangled rat's nest of nonsense, just like they are, by the way. So they get the teams back, and everyone gets to pat themselves on the back and have a press conference. We all congratulate ourselves, and Ted Leonsis is like, yeah, that's where I always wanted to be. Totally. I'm sure I believe it.
But here's what I wonder, though. Does it matter what the prologue was?
To most people, the answer is no.
To the average person. You just said for you,
yeah.
you keep score, you'll remember,
oh,
you're angry,
so
all that.
Yeah.
You do that more than any person I know.
100%. It's my thing.
I think the average person, their opinion on Ted Leonsis ultimately is going to be determined by how his teams are.
Mm-hmm.
If you like Ted Leonsis right now, you probably are a bigger hockey fan than basketball fan, I would say. But you feel good about the direction of the teams, whether that's the Caps, who are playoff bound for the moment, the Wizards, who are finally rebuilding with Winger and Dawkins. If you are anti him as an owner, you think that the Caps should have more than one cup, or he should have kept Barry Trotz, or maybe that he's done a bad job running the Wizards. But we don't think of Jack Kent Cook as the guy that took the Redskins out of D.C. to Landover, Maryland.
Right.
We think of the beginning of the incredible run of this organization and then three Super Bowls on his watch. So I think if they win, Ted won't have much to worry about.
Yeah, people don't care. People don't care. Like, they don't care about the majority of stuff, right? Like, they want to watch their teams. A lot of times they want to just hear positive stuff or whatever. I think the majority of rank-and-file fans might be irritated for 5 to 10 minutes about this, but, you know, I'll just go to Capital One Arena. It worked out, so who cares? I think that's how most people are going
to
feel.
Best thing about them staying in D.C. is that neighborhood, which is important to a lot of us, where we've spent so many great days, is going to flourish moving forward, hopefully. Because it's been in a bad way lately, the last few years. But had the teams left, it would have bottomed out and it would have been a disaster. But now it's got a chance. And really, the city needed the teams. I mean, I shudder to think about what it would have meant to D.C., especially if they don't get the Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, certainly without the two kind of benchmarks of the Caps and the Wiz, we're talking about 400,000 people coming into D.C. to spend money, to go to the establishments, restaurants, bars in the area, to walk around the neighborhood at a time where 49% of foot traffic from before the pandemic is here in the city at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They needed the teams, and they got the teams back, and hopefully it can help with a revitalization, not only of that neighborhood, but just big picture.
D.C. at large, yeah.
In D.C. The Nationals begin a brand new campaign. For East time in D.C. today, they start their year with the Cincinnati Reds. Let's get into predicting what lies ahead for the 2024 Nationals in their 20th season as a ball club. We're Grant and Danny. Rudy's Golf in Kingstown, Alexandria on opening day.
Vargas dancing off third. Hauser delivers. Swinging a fly ball. Hit to deep left field. Back goes Stewart to the warning track. He's at the wall. Looking up. Going. Gone. Goodbye. Bang. Zoom goes Lane Thomas with a three-run home run. His second home run of the spring. Comes with two out here in the top of the fifth inning. And the Nationals have regained the lead.
Kick off your future with the law firm of Condori and Murat, the official sponsor of this here Grant and Danny radio program. They'll help protect your assets, update your will and your trust. They did it for my parents. They will do it for you. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. Visit kmlawyers.com. Mention the show to get a discount. kmlawyers.com. We are live today at Rudy's Golf, celebrating opening day at their sports bar here in Kingstown, Alexandria. Of course, a beautiful driving range is to our right, where they've got a double-deck driving range with top tracer tech, a couple of putt-putt courses, and a full restaurant, fun for the entire family. Visit rudysgolf.com. This is the go-to spot for golf and entertainment. The Nationals begin their season just about an hour and 10 minutes from right now, so I figured, Danny, we could do a deep dive here on G&D into the roster and preview the upcoming 2024 campaign. Let's begin with the starting rotation. Josiah Gray is getting the ball for the first time on opening day today. He was their all-star last year. He was outstanding before the all-star break, ran out of gas as the year went on, and frankly struggled quite a bit in the second half of the season. But if you look at some of the numbers, he was kind of the same in the first half as the second half, with the difference being he got out of a lot of jams.
Yeah, so he gets himself into trouble, runners, right?
He was able to basically wiggle out and walk the tightrope better before the all-star break. But he's only 26. This was one half of their return in the Scherzer-Turner deal with the Dodgers. And the now former all-star this past season gets the call on opening day today.
Still newish to pitching. Remember, position player in college, and you know, so only kind of recently took to this. So still fine-tuning some things, different developmental track than some. Some guys take to it very quickly, like Jacob DeGrom was a shortstop in college, and you know, obviously turned into a pretty good major league pitcher when healthy. But Gray is still, you know, he's a tinkerer. He's a relentless perfectionist in terms of kind of honing the craft. Eventually, it's got to become second nature. You let the talent eat. Because there are those innings and there are those counts and there are certain batters where you just go, dude, that guy's electric, right? You know, the fastball rides in, the slider snaps, the curveball's nasty. Now you got a cutter and you go, how's anyone hitting that? And then there are other times where his, you know, the mechanics get a little bit off, the fastball's flying up and away, he's walking left-handers, you know, left, right, six ways from Sunday, and the inconsistency has kind of been his bugaboo. If he can be consistent in the strike zone, getting ahead with quality strikes, not just, you know, throwing cookies where he gets hit, I mean, he gives up a lot of home runs, he could really be something.
The big key to his progression last year was keeping the ball in the park and his home run rate coming down. He had given up the most homers a year earlier in the National League. But his walk rate was actually a career worst last year by a little bit. His strikeout rate was the worst it's been in his 3 years in the big leagues as well. And while his ERA, which had been 5.4 and 5.0, dropped again to 3.9, which is a massive improvement, his expected ERA was the highest at any point over 3 years, 4.5, 4.2, and then last year, actually, 5.03. So theoretically, you know, he pitched to a little over a run's worth of luck. So he's got to be better. He knows that going into the season. But because he had such a good first half with his ERA, made the All-Star team, he got the nod to be their first starter out of the chute. Game number two will be started by Patrick Corbin. One last ride here for Patrick Corbin, the 2019 World Series hero. Since then, no bones about it. He's been the worst starting pitcher in the major leagues.
But very bad.
The benefit, I guess, to Corbin having been here, if there's such a thing, he's led the league in losses three straight years, in hits two of the last four seasons, in earned runs two of the last three seasons, in home runs over the last 3 years combined. He takes the ball every 5 days. He pitches deep into games for the most part. He'll give you five, six, occasionally seven innings on a staff and for a rotation that is made up of younger guys that they're being careful with in terms of pitch and inning restrictions. So he's provided value in that way, but this is the last of a six-year, $140 million contract that saw him throw very well and win a World Series in year one, and then the 5 years since will go down as having been a debacle.
Yeah, I mean, usually the last couple years of a deal like that are the tax. This has really been 5 years of a tax for that World Series run, but I'll pay it again.
I still think you would do it.
I'll trade it right now. You got something to be or a place to sign, but yeah, it hasn't gone according to plan. I really do think that the playoff run where he was used out of the bullpen as a lefty specialist at times, multi innings. You think about Game 7 against Houston, and then that following start stop in 2020. I think it really took a toll on him. It didn't do that for everybody. Some guys bounced around and were fine. Other guys had never been the same, and I think that was the case here with Corbin. But you know, I know it's easy to make jokes and it's easy to you know, make him a punching bag, but he's a great teammate. He's kind of that senior leader on a young staff in that clubhouse, and guys rave about him.
Strategically, they pushed Mackenzie Gore to the four spot in the rotation to begin the year. That's so that he can throw the home opener at Nats Park when you guys file into the ballpark on Monday. That means Jake Irvin, the 27-year-old right-hander who was a rookie last year, will be the third starter in Game 3 against the Reds to begin the season. He won the job with a very strong spring. He was terrific at points in the exhibition campaign this year, and he impressed last season. Look, this is not by any means a lock to be a rotation piece for years to come, certainly not a front or middle of the rotation guy. Best case scenario for him, he ends up being maybe the fifth starter for a long period of time moving forward. But a 4.5 ERA last year in 24 starts, he exceeded expectations. He was a pitcher in the system at the beginning of the year who was kind of viewed as someone who might get an opportunity if they needed someone to come up and make a couple of spot starts. And he came up and never went back down. He pitched 24 times. He kept taking the ball and occasionally threw really, really well. So he's big, 6'6", 235 pounds.
He's a horse.
I hope, because he's such a great guy, and he's been, to this point, I'd say, better than advertised, I hope he can end up being an answer in the back of the rotation. Worst case, he's probably a reliever, but I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do at the beginning of the year.
They need one of these. They need a couple of these, to be frank with you, right? Where a guy that really wasn't part of the expected group that you're counting on. Like, all the eggs are in the Cade Cavalli basket for a handful of years. They need a Jake Irvin. They need a Jackson Rutledge. They need somebody, maybe Rutledge more higher profile, but they need an Irvin to come in and give them meaningful innings if you're going to be a contender at some point, right? They can't all be Max Scherzers. They can't all be superstars that you go pay top dollar for or first overall picks. They haven't had guys like this kind of come up and supplement and be part of the rotation and be effective. I mean, the best story was, you know, first rounder Eric Fetty, who was fine at best. They need one of these guys in Irvin. He showed pretty well last year for, you know, got the opportunity that he probably wouldn't have gotten on a lot of teams. But, you know, due to the injuries and him kind of sticking around, he sort of looked the part last year at times, I thought. So, yeah, back end of the rotation guy for sure.
The most intriguing arm in the rotation to me is Mackenzie Gore.
No doubt.
And he will pitch fourth of the five arms in that home opener, as I mentioned. Gore's got the highest ceiling. He is the guy that has the best chance to become a front-of-the-rotation starter. He's got a fastball from the left side. He runs up to 98. He's got three-plus big-league pitches. There were a lot of games last year where he looked like a number two starter.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, every now and then, he gets rocked. As he called it on our show, he gives up some touchdowns. He did not handle big innings well. Things going poorly behind him, or you know, when two, three guys would get on, they'd normally all come around to score. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to walk the tightrope that Josiah Gray did. But he does a lot of things well. His fastball velocity is 68th percentile in the sport. His whiff percentage, getting swings and misses, 64th percentile. His extension, where he releases the ball, kind of going toward home plate, is in the 94th percentile. So even though he's only 6'2", he pitches in a way that makes him feel bigger, makes his fastball play better, like he's releasing it right in front of your nose. He is both deceptive and nasty. And I know he was pitching against minor leaguers, but I had a really good seat to watch him in the tune-up game at Nats Park going back to their noon start 3 days ago. And my God, was he he was just lights out.
He's filth.
I mean, it was incredible. Both sides of the plate, feel for all of his pitches, touching 98. That'll play against any hitter in the big
league. He hides the ball a little bit too, just his natural delivery. Son of a gun is nasty. And he's mean, and he's like, he's not that nice on game day. Like, he's got all the makings of a bona fide number one ace stud star in this league. It's about putting it together. You know, it's avoiding those meltdowns. Remember, early on in his career, Steven Strasburg was this way, right? Where the wind was blowing across the diamond and, you know, somebody misplayed a fly ball. Next thing you know, it's meltdown city and his body language stinks and he's ticked off. That's part of the next step. Terrible crap is going to happen over 162. Right? Not every start's going to be 72 and sunny. How do you bull your neck? How do you bail your teammates out, right? That's kind of his next step in terms of growth, is avoiding those meltdowns. I mean, I think there was a game this spring, Jeeps, where he mowed. I think it was through three or four innings. It was, you know, 9 up, 9 down, or 12 up, 12 down. And then all of a sudden, it was like he couldn't find the plate anymore, right? Though you eliminate those kind of meltdown-type things, the overall numbers are going to be staggering.
fifth starter to begin the year is Trevor Williams. How long will he be in the rotation is kind of the big question regarding him. He's 31, about to be 32 years old. The former Met in the division got a two-year, $13 million deal as a former reliever to be stretched out and to help them eat some innings. And he did that last year, but not going to be overly effective, not going to be a guy who shines very often for them. The question is, when do you supplant him with a Jackson Rutledge, or when does Cade Cavalli get healthy enough to start making some starts? Or one of the other arms in the system, whether that's the lefty DJ Hurs they got from the Cubs, or Mitchell Parker, who has kind of like the next Jake Irvin, in my opinion, in terms of profile. When do one of those guys take over for him when they're deemed ready? Looking at the position players, let's go first with the infielders. I think when you look at the Nats infield, you know, at first base, Joey Gallo, if he can get off to a fast start and hit some home runs, could have trade value, but he's very much a placeholder. At second base, Luis Garcia, still only 23, was out of options, or they would have sent him down probably to keep Trey Lipscomb up because he outperformed him by a mile in spring training. Garcia's on his last opportunity here.
Yes.
They're giving him one last chance. This is a guy that very clearly Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo publicly have made comments very frustrated with. They're clearly just about over him at this point, but they're giving him one last chance at second base because he is still very young. Abrams at short, we talked about earlier in the show, a budding star has a chance to be the best player in the organization for years to come. And then third base is going to be open very soon. Nick Senzel, they signed to a one-year deal, the 28-year-old former top five pick out of Tennessee. He is just kind of getting them to the middle of the season until Lipscomb or Brady House can come up and begin their career. In the meantime, you didn't want to sign anybody good enough that they would block those guys when they're ready. So Senzel, who is certainly not good enough to do that, was the solution on the cheap.
Yeah, I think you said it very well, right? With all due respect to Nick Senzel, who's a big leaguer, he is not blocking anybody. He is there to play third base until somebody else is ready. I presume it's going to be Trey Lipscomb first, to be honest with you, but who knows? But, yeah, you don't want those kind of situations where if you're a first-division club and you're trying to win 95-plus games, you got an opportunity to go out and sign someone that could, you know, you probably have to give them a couple of years, and now you block one of your top prospects. It's not where the Nats are. The Nats, you know, we're very smart and shrewd about doing that. You know, you kind of work around the edges here, and I know it frustrated some folks where there were probably avenues for improvement, but that's not what it's about. The improvement is coming from the system for the first time in a while as opposed to somebody out there in free agency. Like, they could have signed Matt Chapman and been a 74-win team. Cool. You know, you wait for one of the kids.
Their backup infielders are switch hitter Nassim Nunez, switch hitter Ildemaro Vargas. Nunez is just, he doesn't hit.
No.
He is here to chew bubble gum and play defense.
And run sometimes, I guess.
And he can definitely run as well. They'll have him as a pinch runner. They're bringing him over from the Marlins, Rule 5 pick. He probably would have been sent down for Lipscomb as well, but you're not allowed to send Rule 5 picks down. You would then return
him
to the previous organization. So they've got to keep him in the major leagues for the duration of the season to keep him as part of their org moving forward. In the outfield, they kept just four guys. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in center. There's going to be plenty of days, I'm sure, against left-handed pitching where Victor Robles starts in center field, maybe platoons with left-handed bat Eddie Rosario, who's in center field today against the right-handed pitcher. Lane Thomas will be their primary right fielder. Jesse Winker will be their left fielder against righties. When a lefty's on the mound and Robles starts, maybe you go with Rosario over Winker and left.
I bet you'll see some Gallo out there, too, on occasion, right, just to kind of mix and match. But, yeah, only four on the roster at this
point. He's won a couple gold gloves in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, obviously he's such a massive dude. You don't think of him as a proficient defender, but he's pretty solid out there. So, you know, you're not going to supplant Lane Thomas or anything like that, but you can use him in a pinch or an off day or somebody, you know, slips on a banana peel or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's the outfield depth. There's the four guys, and I like finally that they're not just saying, Robles, it's your gig for the indefinite. You know, he's going to be part of platoons maybe. He'll still get plenty of time. But I think they finally realized, you know what, we can do better.
Putting a bow on the roster breakdown, bullpen should be pretty good, actually. This will be the first time, certainly over the last few years in this down period for the organization where they've been a bottom feeder, that Davey Martinez has a plethora of options in the pen at the beginning of the season. Kyle Finnegan would probably not be a closer on a team like the Dodgers or a club that wants to go win a World Series. Mm-hmm. He'd be a setup man on a first division team. Having said that, he is an outstanding back of the bullpen arm, now 32 years old, throws gas, has added yet another pitch this offseason, continues to kind of work on his craft and get better and better. I really, really like the tandem of him and Hunter Harvey in terms of stuff in the back of the pen. Then you've got hard throwers, man. Tanner Rainey was on this team in 19 when they won the World Series, pitched a lot in the postseason. Jordan Weems, who they ended up using a lot last season. The only lefty in the pen, Robert Garcia, throws 97, 98 miles an hour. Dylan Floro and Matt Barnes were both brought over this offseason. So was Derek Law, who pitched a lot in the majors for the Reds last year. So in the case of Law, Barnes, and Floro, three guys who have pitched a ton in the majors with other clubs, adding veteran depth to a bullpen with some younger options. But if you look at it, compared to the rest of the roster, the ages in the bullpen, 32, 29, 31, 31, 27, 33, 33, 33, those are the old men.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, right? I mean, Barnes was a closer a couple years ago in Boston, I believe. You know, there, you got some good back-end experience there. And I think it's actually by design. And hear me out on this. You actually want to sort of reinforce some of the things with some of these kids, right? It's not important that Nixon's out wins a bunch of games. I don't just care about that. But you'd like Ruiz, and you'd like Abrams, you'd like Gore, and Josiah Gray. Get some of your hard work rewarded. So a little bit more dependable of a bullpen maybe than you'd normally see for a second division club, because you know you have a nice outing, and that's really what it's more about than if you're able to hold on to win 5-4 in the middle of June. But they want to reinforce some positive things here and having a bit more of a dependable bullpen for a team that'll probably finish last or second last in this really, really good NL East. That's actually probably some value there. So it actually makes sense to me that you'd build that way with some veteran stability there.
We are closing in on opening day for the Washington Nationals. We'll be turning over our airwaves to Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler for the first time this regular season, coming up in about 22 minutes right here on The Fan. We've still got the Nats lineup coming your way and a preview of the Caps game this evening as well, which you will hear right here on The Fan with John Walton. I also want to mention, though, next, as soon as we return, the Chiefs did something awesome yesterday. And I'm just surprised more teams don't do it. I'm going to tell you what that is. Remember, we've still got tickets to Nats opening day to give you at the very end of the show coming up about 20 minutes from now. Live from Rudy's Golf in Kingstown, we're Grant and Danny. Remember, we are giving away tickets to see the Washington Nationals at the end of our show in their final segment here. You're going, you're off already? Yeah, because it's opening day, you silly geese. Charlie and Dave, pregame, 3:40, first pitch, 4:10. So we've got about 13 minutes left with you from Rudy's Golf in Kingstown, Alexandria. We're at their sports bar where the food and drinks are delicious. We are just outside of the heated bays where folks are swinging their golf clubs. Top Tracer technology, putt-putt courses, something for everybody in the family. This is the go-to spot for golf and entertainment. So come enjoy opening day and Nats baseball this spring out here at Rudy's Golf. Got a lot to get to in our final few minutes here. Wanted to start by just reminding everyone just getting in their cars or as they maybe head out to watch opening day with buddies. Drake May is taking part in his pro day today. Mike Garofolo, 2 minutes ago, tweeting, Commanders, Patriots, Broncos with some of the biggest contingents watching Drake May's throwing session, which is about to begin. He said that the Commanders, one of three teams that have the most people there to watch him. Now, that is not surprising or telling. Doesn't mean they're going to take him. But they're the number two club on the board. He's not going first. He might go second. Teams like the Patriots who pick third and the Broncos who pick outside of the top 10 but have been linked to him, could trade up and get him, are very much in the Drake May conversation. So I'm not surprised by that. I'm sure that'll get a lot of retweets and people will talk about it. But why wouldn't they have one of the biggest contingents? They're choosing between him, Daniels, and McCarthy.
Yeah, you're looking for reasons why. You're also looking for reasons why not. Because, again, the choice will be yours. There will be one player off the board. I know this sounds overly simplified and elementary, but I think it's critical. Any bet on one player is a bet against everybody else. You're betting that the guy that you select is better than every other option, right? That's what the draft is. That's what free agency is. That's what re-signing your own player is. You're basically saying that by taking or not taking Drake May, you're betting that the option that you choose will work out for you and your team infinitely better. And when it doesn't, you need to be held to account. So, yeah, especially if, you know, if you're not going to take him, you need everybody there. You need people being able to defend why you're going to pass. If you are taking him, you better be right. So you need to, you know, as many people's eyes and opinions, you know, not just for the sake of consensus, but for the sake of information and debate, because it's a major decision, not just for a year or two, for the next, hopefully, decade plus of your franchise.
Channel 9, kudos to them. They've been covering all these pro days. Chick Hernandez was
love it.
Caleb Williams, pro day at USC, the local kid, and then I saw he was in Baton Rouge. Desmond Purnell, their other sports reporter, is in Chapel Hill today at North Carolina. But he posted a video a few minutes ago on X that showed Adam Peters and Cliff Kingsbury chopping it up with offensive coordinator Chip Lindsey, who calls plays and has helped Drake May develop over the last year. I just love all the reactions. I always like reading the comments where there was a really, really funny exchange yesterday where if you saw Jaden Daniels came out onto the field, and Adam Peters went over and dapped him up. So we've got the, you know, the hug for Caleb Williams. We got the dap kind of half hug for Jaden Daniels. How will he greet Drake May today? It's just funny how people are parsing every little bit of the experience.
So
up
did he do a butt slap on Drake May, or did he do like did they do an elbow greeting? What did they do?
How many smiles with the offensive
on.
Coordinator?
God.
I count four smiles. He must really like what he's being told.
We just want information so badly.
It is.
We're just
the
so
NFL,
starving.
It's just such a drug, isn't it?
We are starved.
The draft can't come soon enough.
Seriously.
We're about a month away now.
And by the way, it feels like an eternity. Because now we've already done combine. Now we're in pro day season. And for the next, you know, 3+ weeks or whatever, it's that, you know, Mel Kiper shouting at Todd McShay and, you know, everybody else on NFL Network. Guys are rising and falling based on what I'm hearing. Oh, dude, it's lying season. It can't come soon enough.
Let's give you a Caps power play. They are in action this evening, taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs north of the border. Another huge game as they barrel down the stretch with 11 to go. Capitals peaking at the right time, winners of 3 in a row, 6 of 7. They are 9-4 in March, 18 points. Just juxtapose that with the Leafs, one of the best teams in the East. Everybody likes the talent. I know they're super banged up under Sheldon Keefe right now, but the Maple Leafs have 13 points this month, 5 fewer than Washington. Everyone talks about the Caps and the fact that their goal differential so bad, and how could you make the playoffs with such a negative goal differential? Since the All-Star break, they're not only plus, but they're closing in on plus 10 in goals. This is a different team right now, playing with a lot of confidence. Look no further than between the pipes. Chucky Lindgren back in the net tonight, last 11 games for him, 8-3 with a 2.31, .922 save percentage. Alex Ovechkin, 18 goals in his last 25. He's pretty much turned the team's whole season around with 29 points over these last 25 games.
Last time they played Toronto, by the time I had eaten dinner and got down to try to watch the game, Austin Matthews had already scored. You know, 10 seconds, 16 seconds, whatever it was, into the game. And they didn't stop scoring the entire time. Touchdown, extra point, etc. Might be banged up tonight. May or may not play.
Well, he's sick. So we don't know if he's going to play or not. He's questionable game time. But he's not hurt. It's ill.
Illness,
so
yeah.
It might have been a well-timed stomach bug. Maybe the Capitals put something in his
Seriously. Hope with all due respect to the Toronto Maple Leafs, I hope everyone coughs on everybody and no one gets to play tonight. I need those 2 points. But to your point that you just made, it's, you know, it tells you, A, how well the Capitals have played lately, but also tells you what they were doing before. It was not particularly sustainable. You win 2-1 or you lose, you know, 6-0 was kind of the way things had gone for them for some time. They are playing way better hockey now against all odds, and it's a blast.
Yeah, don't look right now, but Dylan Strome has also been marvelous.
Stromer.
Since the All-Star break. He is top 15 in points in the entire NHL over that time. That is your Caps power play. Which brings us, Daniel, full circle to the men of the hour, to the boys the whole day is about, the reason we're at Rudy's Golf in Kingstown today, celebrating opening day in Major League Baseball, the Washington Nationals. They get ready for game number 1, season number 20, Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati for the first time this season and in the calendar year 2024. Let's fire up the music. We got a Nationals lineup to work our way through. And I should tell you before we get into the lineup, there's been a change already to the lineup. Breaking news from Cincinnati, Nick Senzel's been replaced in the lineup in the 8th spot, the third baseman, by switch hitter Ildemaro Vargas. So this means one of two things. Either he's not feeling well, or he somehow is hurt, But you typically do not scratch a guy on opening day an hour before the game after you already said he was going to start.
A little note here from Spencer Nussbaum, covers the Nationals now for the Washington Post. Senzel was taking grounders on the field, seemingly in fine health at the start of warmups, and I didn't see what happened to cause it. He started looking at his thumb and shaking his hand. Trainer popped over, and they headed off the field. May have caught a bad hop on his thumb or something like that.
Oof, that is tough. On opening day.
On opening day.
With the emotions in the big league ballpark. Fans filing in, that is brutal.
Sports are great, but my God, they're cruel.
Playing against the club that drafted him in the top five, yeah. I'm sure he had family in attendance, that's awful. All right, let's give you your Nats starting lineup. On the mound, Josiah Gray taking on the Cincinnati Reds. He gets his first opening day assignment, the All-Star 1 year ago, looking to get off to a fast start. Behind him, C.J. Abrams will bat first and play shortstop. Looking to improve on last year's 47 stolen bases.
Yeah, with the green light, you would think, from Jump Street. Once he moved in that leadoff spot, he was among the league leaders in steals in the National League and all of baseball. Now, from the start of the season doing that, you could see huge numbers.
Right fielder Lane Thomas looking for a third straight Player of the Year award for the Nationals. He hit 28 home runs last season, stole 20 bags. Lane Thomas has become the most consistent player in this lineup, and last year, really, circuit to circuit was the best player on the team.
The more Abrams gets on base, the better it is for Lane Thomas for a number of reasons. One, RBI chances, but number two, you're going to see more fastballs, right? You don't want Abrams walking into second base, so you might see some more cookies if you're Lane Thomas. Numbers, I think, are going to take care of themselves, but Abrams can only help.
Batting second, playing right, Lane Thomas. The left fielder will hit third, Jesse Winker, in his Nationals debut. Winker has played in Cincinnati, Seattle, and Milwaukee the last 3 years. Fourth team in four seasons. He was an All-Star way back in 2021 with the Reds team he is taking on today. He had a career-high 24 homers, batted over 300 that year.
This is a, you know, I don't want to say a redemption story. It's not as if he's done something wrong, but looking to get his career back on track. That's given him an opportunity to do that, to play every day, presumably, and hit in the middle of the order. He'll have an opportunity with the couple of guys at the top of the order we mentioned to have some pretty meaningful at-bats.
Joey Meneses is the DH. Joey Meneses will bat cleanup, looking for more power this year from Meneses, who last season only hit 13 home runs in 154 games. In fact, he homered the same amount of times in 2022 as last year, and it was in about 375 more at-bats, but he did drive in a lot of runs. He drove in 89 runs for the Nats.
He started off, I think he went months with only like a home run or two. Then had a little bit of a power surge right around the All-Star break. And as you said, finished with 13. But, yeah, it was the power stroke simply was not there for Meneses.
Joey Gallo, first game as a National. He bats fifth, plays first base, the big left-handed slugger. A lot of home run potential, tons of strikeouts. He's going to draw walks. They brought him here to hit for power.
Yeah, he's here to take pitches and swing real hard and see what happens. Not a great spring for him, but again, another guy with on a short-term deal hoping that he can hit a bunch of bombs. They'd be able to spin him.
Switch hitting catcher K-Bert Ruiz. It's go time now. Let's figure out what Ruiz is all about. So much of his season's going to be a story of trying to improve his defensive metrics, but he has, for the last couple of years, had a much higher expected batting average than what he actually was able to do on the field. Let's see him start to turn that around. He will be hitting sixth. In center field, left-handed batting Eddie Rosario bats seventh. He also makes his Nats debut. He was the NLCS MVP for the Braves a couple of Octobers ago.
Yeah, forced his way into the lineup. They couldn't keep him off the field. Hit north of 20 home runs last year in Atlanta. And his, you know, some pop in that bat. So I love that signing, and I love him being able to get the start in opening day.
We mentioned Ildemar Vargas is in the lineup for Nick Senzel, who seemed to have gotten hurt before the game during ground ball infield work. Well, Vargas will take his spot in the eight hole. He will also take his spot at third base. The switch hitter plays third, bats eighth, and that means second baseman Luis Garcia, the left-handed hitting 23-year-old, will bat ninth.
Garcia's the guy, and Martinez mentioned it to us, and Mike Rizzo's mentioned it a couple times, you know, on the air, off the air, et cetera. There have been those eye contact, heart-to-heart Danny Tanner-type moments, right, where you got to figure it out, dude. This is your last shot. It's weird to think about that with a 23-year-old, but he was up as a, you know, as a teenager, and some of those same mistakes kind of have kind of continued to plague him, the inconsistency. He's got too much talent to be a guy that's on the threshold of getting sent down or released. And they're basically saying, now we've got people behind you breathing down your neck. It's go time.
game one for the Nats today in Cincinnati. Then they're off tomorrow. They will then play Saturday and Sunday leading up to game four and the home opener on Monday at Nationals Park. And you are going, if you're caller number 10, right now at 800-636-1067. Congrats, you're winning two tickets to the Nats on opening day, April 1 against Pittsburgh. First 20,000 fans are getting a reversible bucket hat. Pre-game festivities include an appearance by the Budweiser Clydesdales, red carpet player intros, live music, face painters, balloons, the whole deal. All gates open at 2 o'clock. Congratulations to whoever wins. Enjoy opening day, the Caps tonight, the NCAA tournament all evening long. Thanks to Darris, Ryan, Grant, and Danny saying so long from Rudy's. Let's play baseball.
Perfect sports day.
Thank you for coming.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.